Hello, everyone. Welcome to Hope, Heal, Recover, a podcast brought to you by IBH Addiction Recovery. I'm your host, Jonathan Wiley. In our first season, Stories of Substance, we explore the field of drug and alcohol addiction treatment from the perspective of the professionals who provide the life-saving programs that make recovery possible. Today, we have Paul Roberts with us. Paul is the director of our housing program here at IBH. Paula, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jonathan.
You're welcome. Paul, you've been with IBH for, 20 plus years?
Almost 23 years.
23 years. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. So listen up, y'all, because she's been here a long time and she knows what she's talking about. She's our housing director. And what that means at IBH is she takes care of all the clients that are here in terms of their housing needs, whether they're 3.5, which for those of us not in the field, that's our most intense level of care. Those are the clients that are our residents here 24/7, and we're responsible for their well-being and supervision over those days and hours, all the way to our recovery housing program, which has been kind of a relatively new program for IBH in terms of we actually have clients who eventually become tenants of our housing here, both men and women that we serve. So in many ways, Paula and her team have, some of the most frequent interaction with the clients and perhaps the longest longevity in terms of a relationship with the clients. Paula, so as we remind everybody, the first season of this podcast is really focused in on what's it like to work in the addiction field. Mm-hmm. And why would somebody want to work in the addiction field? And while this isn't a job interview, we try to start off by just giving you a chance to tell us a little bit about yourself, but also about how did you get here? What triggered you to want to become, a member of the IBH team? Gee, you've been here for 23 years, so it must be fairly rewarding for you. But how did you get here? How did Paula Roberts arrive where she is today?
Well, I'd like to say my journey started in 1995. I was drinking alcoholically. I was working at City Hospital, Akron City Hospital. My husband worked at St. Thomas Hospital as a painter. And I think he got the job to paint Ignatia Hall. So those people told him all about alcoholics and all the things. So he got some education, and he had called Ignatia Hall, and they wanted to talk to me, of course. So they put me on the phone, and I probably was not in the best frame of mind, but I don't know what I agreed to, but I agreed to go into treatment. So I went into St. Thomas in 95, and I did their 28-day program at the time. And I learned a lot of things about the disease and the program of AA, and it was all well and good. It just wasn't for me. I didn't think I was that bad. I wasn't one of those people.
Sure.
So I tried to continue on with my drinking career. That ended badly as well. So the doctors recommended that I come to IBH. So I came to IBH in 96, and I stayed here for 109 days, and I love IBH. Just fell in love with the people. It was a home feel. I just felt like I belonged. So, but again, I got out and kind of went on my own and left to my own devices. I went back to, drinking again. Went back to St. Thomas, did another 28 days, got out. Again, didn't follow through. So City Hospital sent me to a treatment center in Columbus, stayed there, completed. And again, I always completed all the programs. I was the A student.
Yeah.
I was the great client. I did everything that they wanted me to do. But deep down inside, I always thought I was a little bit different. I could do this. I could control it.
Right.
So in 1999 was my last treatment center, and I had made the decision to go because I was sick and tired of being sick and tired and, right. and living the way I was living. And I knew that there was a solution because I had been through other treatment centers. So I ended up at Raymar. And I loved Raymar and completed their program. And I went, when I went to Raymar, I met their housing director. I think her name was Roseanne. And I told her I was looking for a year-long program. I needed to be away from alcohol for like a good solid year.
Yeah.
And she said, well, if you do our residential program and you live in our three-quarter house, it could end up being close to a year. And I said, well, sign me up, you know.
Yeah.
So, yes, I did their residential program, and then I moved into their three-quarter house. And that was the key for me. To help bridge that very structured, supervised environment to living independently, you know. And I had a husband, a house, a car, a family, a job to go back to, but I just needed that extended period of time around the recovery community. Being out in the community, but coming back to a supportive environment. So that was very key to me. And so I stayed sober, and a couple years went by. And I don't know if I met women at meetings from IBH, or I called IBH and said, hey, give the girls my phone number. I'll pick them up for meetings. And that's how I started getting back into IBH. Picking up girls for meetings. And then back in the day, they had phase one, phase two, and phase one clients would stay in the house and have leads. And my lead was every third Monday of the month, I think I signed up for. So staff was seeing me all the time, and I would sign the girls back in from a meeting. And one of the supervisors said, hey, have you ever thought about working at IBH? And I was like, well, no, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
You know, and at the time I was working with my husband painting condos, and that's physical work and it's dirty work. And I thought, you know what? I'm not getting any younger. You know, maybe I do want a desk job. So I applied and got hired and been here ever since.
One of the first things that Paula taught me when I came here, and I don't want to steal your thunder, but it's still one of my favorite sayings, is that when clients come here, we share with them that we will love them until they learn to love themselves. And I don't know if you coined that saying.
No,
but,
I did not.
But you were the first one I heard it from. Can you say a little bit more, you know, a little deeper about what that means and why that's so important for the clients to understand that?
Well, for, you know, if you've lived in addiction, you know what it's taken away from you, and it strips you of everything, including your self-esteem. So you have no self-worth, no self-love, and you come here and you're very broken, and you don't know, you know, the disease has a hold of you. You don't know how to get out from underneath it. I got stuck in that place where I couldn't live with it and I couldn't live without it, and that's a horrible place to be. So when you have staff at IBH that are in recovery, we've been there, we've walked that road. So we know what it's like to be day one, day two, when you're a bundle of raw nerves and you don't know what to expect. And we've come from chaos and insecurity and not knowing what's coming next. So if we can give them a feeling of safety and secure and compassion and empathy, that goes a long way of making them feel comfortable in their own skin, you know, and feeling like people are really listening and that we do understand.
You've been here over 20 years. So you must have seen a lot in those 20 years, including the time leading up to actually being an employee here at IBH. What kind of changes have you seen in the clientele over the 20 years in terms of what do they, are they the same folks that were coming here 20 years ago? There's just different drugs out there that are available, or are they coming here with more complexity? Are they coming here in different ways than they used to? Have you seen the makeup of our client change that much over the last 20 years?
I don't know that that the clientele has changed all that much. We've always had the older to younger, married, not married, employed, not employed, all the whole gamut, I would say, court ordered, self-admitted. We've always had that. But I know when I was getting sober, it was mainly the drugs that you saw were alcohol and crack. Crack was big. All the time I went through treatment, I was maybe in treatment with one or two heroin addicts. You know, you just didn't see that.
Right.
But when I started working at IBH, it that came prevalent again. You know, heroin really through the opiate crisis really became prevalent in addiction treatment. And I don't know. Alcohol is hard. For me, it was very hard. And I've talked to a lot of heroin addicts, and like the withdrawal and all of it, when they explain what they go through, I can relate because I've been through very similar things with alcohol.
Sure.
Alcohol just happens to be legal, you know.
That's right.
So I didn't really have to do or live the lifestyle that some of those people had to live.
Yeah.
But I can say, you know, if alcohol cost $800 a fifth, I probably would have been doing and you know, I know I would have been living the same type of lifestyle that people are made to do, you know.
When I get into conversations with folks in the community about addictions who maybe aren't as familiar with what we do and the disease itself, one of the first questions is always, well, what's prevalent out there? You know, what's the drug of choice right now? And, you know, it rolls. I mean, it changes constantly. But what I tell them is that alcohol is always number two.
Yeah.
If it's not number one, it's going to be number two in terms
Absolutely.
Of drugs of choice. And as you said, yeah, it's legal. But what they don't, sometimes folks don't think about is it's a drug. You know, there's this alcohol and drug addiction services or alcohol and other drugs. It's a drug.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most dangerous ones to detoxify from.
Yes.
And it has some of the harshest, you know, side effect on your body, on your physical health of any a drug out there. So, you know, that's one thing I don't think folks realize is that the addiction doesn't care what your drug of choice is.
Right.
But alcohol will, despite it being something that's legal, it will always be one of the leading abused drugs and those who are addicted to it or become alcoholics. So we talked about changes in clients. What changes have you seen at IBH?
Well, I know for me, adding recovery housing is key. And having PHP, which back in the day was phase two. Like I said, there was phase one, which was residential. You didn't go off property. You had leads come in and talk to the clients. And phase two, you could call for your own rides and go to meetings and do these things. But yeah, recovery housing, I do believe, is key for long-term recovery. It just sets you up for success. A lot of our clients come and they have nothing. They don't have a driver's license. They don't have a car. They don't have custody of their children. They don't have employment. Now they're sober. Now what? Where do they even start?
Yeah.
So they come to recovery housing. They get some funding. Their rent paid. While they can focus on meeting those goals. I've had clients in the recovery house come, like I said, with nothing. And luckily for IBH, we partner with Novo Paris Laundry that employs our recovery house residents. And we provide a ride there and a ride back, so they can start employment almost right away,
right.
Save money. They have paid off, and most of them have heavy fines they have to pay off.
Right.
So it's a catch-22 situation. You know, they have to do this before they can do that. Well, how do I do this when I can't even do that? So they work at Paris. They pay off fines. They get their driver's license back. They buy cars, nicer cars than I even have.
Right.
And, you know, they really, they do a lot, and it's amazing what they can do in a short period of time.
Yeah.
With the support of the peer supporters. Very important.
A lot of the clients we have are here because of the environment they came from. Mm-hmm. And if we just release them back to that same environment, it's going to provide triggers for them to relapse, or having that recovery housing in place provides that buffer.
Right. That's what happened to me.
Yeah.
All the other times I went to treatment, was the A student, but went right back home, right back to the same environment, right back to the same things.
Yeah.
So.
And it's really neat because they become tenants.
Yes.
You know, they sign a lease with us.
Yes.
And it's a part of reintroducing them into responsibility and the community so that they can succeed, you know, long after they've left us.
Yes.
We hopefully get to see them and have a relationship with them for a year, maybe more, with recovery housing and our aftercare reach program, which we've talked about. Yeah, it's really nice having that as a service. And that's something we have for both men and women now.
Yes, yes.
And there's not a lot of that. And our recovery housing is here on our campus. So for folks who don't know, a lot of recovery housing may not be, is not, you know, associated necessarily with a treatment provider. But having that connection, not only with the services, but with the actual physical location being on this campus, I think adds a layer of benefit for our tenants, our recovery housing tenants, our clients who are still in treatment and still in recovery.
It absolutely does. That's one of our biggest things we have going for us is the neighborhood. It's a safe neighborhood. You know everybody. You know, it feels like family because, you know, that's just what we project. Even, you know, applicants that come back and want to work here, they always say, you know, IBH is part of my heart and part of my soul. This is a special place.
Yeah.
And you can't buy that. You can't teach that. It's the experience that they've had just from being here.
Yeah, this, you know, again, for those who don't know, IBH and our location, we're on 60 plus acres in the heart of Portage Lakes area. That you wouldn't just these days you wouldn't expect to come across as a treatment facility for the folks that we serve. So you mentioned applicants. Part of our theme in this series is you know working in this field. And a standard question we ask most of our guests is what advice would you give to somebody who's out there right now? One of the things that we always point out with IBH and probably other treatment facilities as well is many of our clients are, or many of our staff are in recovery. And many have, like yourself, have at some point in time actually been IBH clients. Mm-hmm. For those folks who are considering working in this field, whether they're in that situation or any other situation, they're coming out of college or they're coming out of high school or they're coming, you know, into recovery. What advice would you give to somebody as to, you know, things to consider as to why you want to be a part of this field?
Well, I would say you really have to have a passion for it, and you really have to want to help people when maybe they don't even want to help themselves. And you do have to have kind of a thick skin, you know, because clients are hurt, you know, and they didn't end up here because their life was going great and wonderful.
Right, right.
You know, we're meeting them at their lowest point in their life. And sometimes staff can take things personal when it's not about us. We just happen to be the person that's in front of them, that they just want somebody to listen to what they have to say.
Yeah.
And they're hurting and they want to express that. So empathy and compassion go a long way. Trauma-informed care goes a long way, so you can have some understanding of what people have been through and how to react to situations that might be triggering or challenging. It's a great field to get into. The rewards outweigh any challenges, if you ask me. Because, again, these are some of the best people I've ever met in my life has been here.
Right.
Clients.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. They're amazing.
We talk about this all the time, and not to repeat ourselves, but the transformation that we get to witness firsthand does make it worth getting up in the morning to
Absolutely.
Come in here. And that's,
Absolutely.
That's why we do this. Mm-hmm. And we're a mission-driven staff, we're a mission-driven organization, whether you're a board member or any type of staff member, that's what drives us. You mentioned recovery housing. What else do you think's in the future? What are we missing in your observation in terms of a system of care, whether it's IBH or just in general? What is it that we're not, you see these clients a lot more than many of us. What is it that we're missing in terms of making their holistic care complete, if you will? Anything that sticks out in your mind or you think, gee, I wish we could do this for the clients?
I would love to have further step down housing, I think, is our next move that we should make.
Yeah.
Because a lot of our residents, women and men, when they get done with our housing, because we are a level 3, they're not quite ready for that independence just yet.
Yeah.
And a step-down house gives them a little bit more of that independence, but still providing that support.
Yeah.
I think that's important. I think that housing with women with children is another big one that is a block for women when they don't have child care and they need to get back to, you know, trying to support children and taking care of children and still balancing all that with their recovery life. It's very difficult and it can be overwhelming and it can set you up for failure when you're putting so much on your plate all at once. So if you have a supportive environment to where you know your kids are taken care of as well as, you know, taking care of yourself
right.
and working on yourself,
right.
That's major.
So, you know, clients have to work on themselves, but so does staff, right? So,
sure.
You know, again, another thing we like to talk with our guests about is your job's hard. Anybody in this field who's in the direct care, who interacts with clients daily, what does Paula Roberts do to take care of herself that you're willing to share and would want others to know?
Well, I guess I have a gift that I can kind of detach. You know, when I go home, I can leave IBH. Not that I don't, you know, think
sure,
about
sure.
it or I get calls at home or whatever.
Yeah.
But I do have a life outside of IBH. I am in the recovery community. So I have a program, a 12-step program that to help me work through things if I come up against challenges or things like that. I love theater. I go to a lot of shows and I love working on puzzles. I love solitude sometimes. You know, it can be very noisy and chaotic here. So when I go home and kind of unplug and just kind of sit in solitude, that helps ground me as well.
Paul and I have done a couple different talent shows. In my years here. And the last one we did, she came out and made the last appearance that Ozzy Osbourne ever made, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah, the final tribute.
But, you know, even though that's fun for us, the appreciation that the clients, I mean, have shared with me, you know, weeks and months after, you know,
yeah.
if they're still here, if they come back and, hey, you sang for us or you did that, they remember that.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and so showing, making yourself vulnerable to clients and showing right. that you can make fun of yourself
right.
or, you know, put yourself out there to be judged
yes.
in terms of that guy can't sing. What's he doing up there? And hopefully it sparks some stuff for our clients, because many of our clients come here and they used to be great artists, whether it right. be performing arts, you know, or painting or drawing
yes.
Or poetry. And that went away. That got buried through their addiction. And when they start to come out of that shell here, we get to see that again. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully in our own little fun way, you know, showing them that, you know, we're willing to put ourselves out there. Yeah. They see that as well. And it helps, you know, get them, have that become awake again within them.
Yeah,
know,
to, I feel like that. It motivates them,
yeah.
you know, like, hey, if she can push herself out of her comfort
That's
zone,
right.
then
right.
I can too.
Yeah.
And you're right. They a lot of them do reconnect with their talent. We had a guy that's stayed in the South House and then came to recovery housing. He very gifted pianist, studied in Europe, went to Juilliard, yeah, I believe, came to the recovery house, working at a grocery store, you know, doing everything that he needed to do. But he had this Facebook group of pianists, you know, and he got a couple of gigs, and he was playing in a high school musical, Beauty and the Beast, and he invited me to come, so I went. And that right there was to see him in his element. Right. And you could tell he was a professional.
Yeah.
And that was his passion. And the smile on his face and the confidence and him playing piano, just, you know, chills.
Yeah, whether it's somebody that's that extreme in their recovery or just seeing somebody at a drug court graduation,
yeah.
right, who's just the weight of the world seems to have been lifted from their, mm-hmm. you know, their shoulders, and to know that we're at least a part of that for yeah. them, I think makes it all worthwhile.
It does.
Well, Paula, thank you so much for being here and taking time out of your busy day.
Well, thank you. It was my honor to to do it.
We appreciate all the work that you and your team do for our clients and for the rest of our staff. So thanks for being here, and we'll see you down the road.
Okay, thank you.